Evening, everyone. This is case number 58530, City of North Las Vegas versus Fifth and Centennial et al. And we have Mr. Hardy representing the appellants and cross-respondents, Mr. Colfire representing the respondent and cross-appellants. I think as the clerk advised you, we're going to have a number of questions here for both sides, so we've expanded the arguments from 15 to 20 minutes per side. You can reserve time within the 20 minutes and on each side, since there's a cross-appeal, and then hopefully that'll give us a little time for our questions as well as your presentation to us. Also, you'll note that Chief Justice Pickering, Justice Hardesty, and I are here at the moment. There are a plane flying from Reno to Las Vegas because they had to appear before the legislature this morning, but they will participate in the case, and we'll listen to the podcast, you know, as soon as it's available. Justice Peregrine has recused himself from participating in this case, so there are six justices on it. So with that in background, Mr. Hardy, you may proceed on behalf of the appellants.
May it please the court, my name is Brian Hardy. I'm with the law firm of Buck Field, and along with me today, I have my partners, Micah Eccles and Jack Wong. We represent the City of North Las Vegas, the appellants in this appeal. Before beginning my argument, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. The simplicity of this case is that it is undisputed that planning is not condemnation. Again, it is undisputed that planning is not condemnation. Here we have opportunistic investors that are attempting to strap taxpayers with the burden and risk of their investment. And the holdings of this court have made it very clear that taxpayers cannot be held responsible for every proposed line on the city's statutorily mandated development plan. Given the clarity of this law and the clarity on these issues, the city respectfully requests that the court reverse the district court decision that it made in granting summary judgment.
Well, let me ask you this. I know there's case law saying planning is not a regulatory taking, but did the city make some acquisitions of property previously to the point that it may have impacted the ability of the landowners to develop the property or to sell it because of the city's previous actions that any future buyers might be looking to?
No, and in fact, as you see from this exhibit here, the approved development, as you know, there's planning is not done in a tunnel. You don't have tunnel vision planning. You plan out an entire city in this case. We have a statutorily mandated under NRS 278, statutorily mandated that we go ahead and have a city master plan, a development plan. In this case, we have the master plan of streets and highways, which you can see exhibited on the bottom and which was provided to you in the handout. Underneath that plan, there was a plan for development of the North 5th Street, among other streets underneath the statute that are required to be identified. That plan had us doing a development review to look to see if there's planning, and we had to plan out whether we're going to deal with a 7-mile strip. Now, if you look at that, it was decided through an official action, and that's a key under buzz too, is that there was official action to go ahead and begin appropriation of approved development and condemnation for a 2-mile strip. Now, that 2-mile strip ended at Cheyenne Avenue. It ran from Owens to Cheyenne Avenue. That was the only acquisition, condemnation, or any other proceedings that proceeded forth. There was nothing above Cheyenne Avenue. Why? Because there was no official action or intent by the city to move beyond Cheyenne Avenue. We can plan and we can look and we can seek out the public's input, which is exactly what the city did, on how we would like to see the development of North Las Vegas, and in this case, North 5th Street within North Las Vegas. But until we move beyond planning into acquisition on a particular project, we cannot. They will continue to refer, and there's, and in the briefs you'll see continuously, they refer to this as a 7-mile project. That's a misnomer. This is a 7-mile development plan, of which there is a 2-mile approved project. Now again, 7-mile plan to see how we can develop the best interest of the individuals, the taxpayers, and the businesses in the city of Nevada, in the city of North Las Vegas. But only the 2 to 2.5 mile plan was approved. That's the acquisition.
You indicate 2-mile approved project, and we understand from the record this the whole project, whether it's parts or not, had been approved by, I guess, the planning division, looking at this whole corridor that they were putting forth. And if I understand your argument, the city only agreed to do one portion of this long strip.
Correct. In fact, the planning of this particular and the proposals as it related to this 7-mile strip actually started with NDOT. The Nevada Department of Transportation initially started reviewing this on how they could alleviate some of the burden off of the I-215 as growth continued to move through town. And so what they decided to do is to identify some potential corridors. One of those corridors was North Fifth Street. And once they identified North Fifth Street as a potential corridor, a subsequent study, again another planning study, was done by the Regional Transportation Center, Regional Transportation Authority, in conjunction with the City of North Las Vegas. And that study took place in 2004, again, looking specifically at this corridor to see what, if anything, could be developed there. Ultimately, that came to the city, and the city decided, you know what, we like the project, but we need public input, so they sought public input on it, but we're only going to approve the development for the first 2.5 miles. Now, this is a significant thing. This 2.5 miles, as you see on this map, puts us over the I-15. If you've ever driven out there, you'll see that the North Fifth Street actually abuts and comes into right over the I-15, but it just kind of goes to nowhere. There's no bridge that connects the two.
They approved it, but my understanding of the public hearings and things of that nature and the subsequent landowners of Fifth and Centennial LLC, one of the members participated in some of these public hearings, as this whole development plan and whatnot.
Absolutely. Every citizen in North Las Vegas was invited to attend. They can all have public comment because we want to know how they want the city developed. That's what city planning is. We invite everybody, come in, tell us how you want us to develop. Here are several alternative plans that we're talking about. And at any point in time, we can either adopt one of those plans or we can scrap any one of those plans and decide to start from scratch based upon the input of the public. And that's planning. That is not condemnation.
Council, factually, isn't it true that at the time that you began these public hearings, that the respondent in this case already owned at least a couple parcels in or about that area? Is that a fair statement?
Yes, there were two parcels that he owned at that point in time, and I appreciate you bringing that up because there's a very fine issue on that. If you realize that he had notice and knew about it on this the planning document that you see in front of me here, there were two things that were here. You have this is on the corner of Centennial and North Fifth Street. On Centennial, when he bought that property in 2000 on Centennial, he actually knew that there was planned under the master plan of streets and highways a 50-foot potential half street improvement. Okay, he knew that when he bought that property. He also knew that there was a potential for.
But he wasn't in. Well, it brings us to an interesting point, and that is both sides of this argument. Was that property encumbered or wasn't it encumbered? Because you make an argument that it wasn't, but yet you're saying he knew. So depending on which side you come down on.
I see it. I see exactly where you're at. The reality is it was unencumbered, and that's consistent with this court's holding in Sproul Homes. In Sproul Homes, it was determined, and in that case in Sproul Homes, that one had adopted civil realty, which is a California case. And in Sproul Homes, it was determined that, you know, city planning is necessary, that NRS 278 and NRS 37, which is the condemnation statutes, are not at odds with each other. In fact, they work together. We have to have city planning. We have to have development plans, and until there is an approved development or some type of identifiable burden on the property, then we can go ahead and have an action.
Okay. At least since Sproul, had Sisolak come in, and that was a physical invasion case at the airport and all, but what about an argument that there's a regulatory taking and that this eventually was, they're going to have to give these dedications anyway, and therefore it would be futile to even apply for any type of variance up front. What's your thoughts on that?
To that issue, Judge Denton actually looked at that and decided that there was no inverse condemnation because, as he stated in his opinion, he stated that neither the city nor the court could identify the burden on this property, if any. And so he specifically put in there, if any, because at no time during trial was there any evidence adduced that could ever be identified what the burden would be on this property. In fact, it was so speculative, it reached out to Sproul Homes and Selby. It was so speculative that nobody knew what was going to happen. You'll read through the trial transcripts, you'll see that their experts tried to identify multiple alternatives that could happen, but nothing was finally approved. And that's the essence of this case.
And if we accept that as true as to the inverse, how does that affect the argument as to pre-condemnation damages potential thereof?
Every case in which this court or any court for that matter, has decided to award pre-condemnation damages that is really a precursor of an inverse condemnation claim or a condemnation-type claim. In this case, that inverse condemnation claim is found insufficiently ripe. Therefore, because we can't identify what the burden is, any burden, on the property, how can we award pre-condemnation damages?
Did the city ever make it clear or known to the public that in light of the change in the economy, they were only going to do this first phase and either abandon or reconsider at a later date, continuing?
It was unnecessary to make any official announcement that there was any change because there had been no adoption of a plan. And until there's an official announcement under BEZ-2, until you adopt an official plan, this is just one of many plans. In fact, every one of the documents cited and provided at trial clearly state that they were preliminary, conceptual, and subject to change. And they're preliminary, conceptual, and subject to change because we seek out public input. That's part of the planning process. We want the taxpayers, we want the businesses to come, provide us input. We welcome that as a city of North Las Vegas. Why? Because we want to build the city that they want developed. And in order to do that, we want their input. So we have to publish things, but we can't go out there and be burdened with pre-condemnation damages every time that we publish something to have public comment. That's not what NRS 37 is about.
Another little stickler, and that is looking at statute 37.110 in terms of looking at the separate parcels versus looking at all the parcels together. I know the party stipulated at some point using an appraisal of the total parcel opposed to looking at the individual parcels. Why was that done? How did that come about? Because that also changes the numbers if we're going in that direction versus your position, not running the numbers at all. But
you're going to hit on my position clearly, that our position is that we would like the court to overturn the summary judgment. But to address the issue on 37.110, you're correct. It specifically states that compensation must be assessed for each source of damages separately. And under 110, that would require the district court judge to go back and assess each of these five parcels and how that damages calculation affected each of these five parcels.
But didn't your appraiser the whole five together as opposed to breaking them out from, let's say, parcels 1, 2, and 3 from parcels 4 and 5?
The appraisers in this case, as you read the district court determination, were completely ignored. Judge Denton in this case decided to ignore the expert witnesses, become his own real estate expert witness, and determine valuation on his own assessment. And that's the problem, is that every one of those expert witnesses that testified, they provided valuations on a square footage basis, which would have easily allowed Judge Denton to determine square footage based upon each parcel had he decided to follow what the appraisers had done.
Is that an abuse of discretion in a bench trial?
What?
Is that an abuse of discretion in a bench trial?
I think it's an abuse of discretion in this trial.
Counsel, you use a term of art in terms of square footage, so to speak. Did the appraisers give us individual parcel assessments, or are you just talking the number of the square footage, which we could then use ourselves to divide by, or did they provide specific information as to the parcels?
When the appraisers did it, they identified it in a general, this is the total amount of damages, but they provided a square footage basis which would have allowed the finder of fact to make a determination as to an assessment of each parcel.
Did you ask the finder of fact to do that?
The finder of fact was obligated under NRS 37.110 to do so.
My question was, that asked?
I don't recall specifically whether it was or was not asked at trial, Your Honor. But we asked them to follow the guidelines under NRS 37, which specifically requires that compensation be assessed as each source of
damage. I guess what Justice Douglas's point, the way it is this, is that the landowners acquired parcels 4 and 5 after the city's explained their intent and what the deal with this property was, parcels 1, 2, and 3 they previously owned, as I understand it. So potentially, assuming there would be pre-condemnation damages, the question would be, would it apply to parcels 4 and 5? Number one. Number two, did the city, assuming that, let's say there isn't, you know, like that, would the city have made this, had to make the specific objection to Judge Denton that you should consider 1.5 separately as opposed to just this general statutory duty to respond to what the court is supposed to do.
I apologize if I misunderstood. I think I understand exactly what you're looking at here. One of the things that was presented at closing arguments after the experts had all testified is we did a breakdown. I know it because I did it. I was trial counsel. We did the breakdown as to what the different damages amounts would have been for each assessed parcel based upon the notice that they had. And we broke that down into multiple different levels. There was four or five different potential damage calculations presented to Judge Denton, all of which were founded upon that expert opinion, all of which were ignored by Judge Denton when he created his own calculation, a calculation that was not supported in any other record. The only number that comes anywhere close to the number that was determined by Judge Denton in this case was there was some testimony by the primary investor in this case as to what amount there was left over on the note. And so, conveniently, at the end of the day, we receive an order from the district court judge that happens to match very closely and align with the amount testified on the note. In other words, given the discrimination, they get to keep the property, and they get the paid-off note, and the city now doesn't have anything other than the ability to continue to move on with its development below Cheyenne Avenue.
The only thing is, generally, we don't second-guess finders of fact, whether they're judges or juries, how they do the damage calculations, as long as they're not off the wall one way or the other. So that's pretty much our case law. So it's just, as Jerry pointed out, this is something, and we said this is an abuse of discretion in how Judge Denton calculated these damages.
And clearly erroneous. I mean, this is a clearly erroneous determination in light of the law and a lot of the statutes that are providing here. So absolutely, it's abuse of discretion for him to be able to have made this determination and to disregard the testimony. And I understand that finders of fact can disregard testimony given weight, but that he shouldn't have been able to do what he did in this case.
Okay.
Quick question. In other words, the statute, 37110, would have given him the appropriate guidance based upon the expert testimony that you feel he ignored, hence the error.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay, you have about 4.5 minutes left, then, like that. Mr. Colthart.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let's just start off where he left off with what Justice Sata just said. Did that statute give guidance to Judge Denton, and was it not an abuse of discretion that he ignored the appraisers?
Well, I think first, may it please the Court, Bill Colthart appearing on behalf of the landowners. And to respond specifically,
by the way, it's good to see you because I couldn't see you.
Jennifer Dorsey and John Courtney.
They didn't
and,
see, I guess.
I can't see Mr. Dorsey, so we'll see
who
they are.
So specifically as to the 37.110, that was not an issue at the trial court. And in fact, the appraisers for both the landowner and the city of North Las Vegas handled this property just as the landowner had. That property had been purchased and assembled and zoned and marketed and was being held as a 20-acre site. So they did never raise the objection that would have allowed the district court to cure that at the time of trial, and I think they've waived it. But more importantly, it is a single property for purposes of the way it was treated with the unity of ownership and interest with the property owner.
So you just say that.
Not a single property with respect to the time at which these parcels were purchased and what
That's
the
correct.
City had publicly stated as to its plan.
That's correct. They were acquired first 10 acres prior to the public announcement of this intent. And the public announcement of the intent to widen the North 5th Street, AMP 7004, that's our announcement of intent for a 7.5-mile-long project. But that was made, at that time, the landowners only owed 10 acres. They had placed the other properties, the adjacent 2.5-acre parcels for another 10 acres of property under contract, and then the city went forward with its announcement to widen this. The testimony at trial was, okay, that additional 25-foot required dedication was not the death nail to this property, and they could have lived with that. but for the later in 2006, the city places its right-in, right-out access restrictions along the entirety of North Fifth, along the entire 7.5-mile regional plan. So, and the testimony was real clear, and I need to digress because the district court heard these same arguments, and the district court recognized that it was a double-edged sword. On the one hand, they're saying the property owner took with notice of this project and all these terrible bad things, sort of a coming to the nuisance argument. But on the other hand, and they made the argument again today, that this is preliminary, conceptual, and subject to change. And the court said that's a double-edged sword, and the court did not adopt that, and in fact had substantial evidence and the testimony of Mr. Lee in our, the landowner rebuttal, in our rebuttal case, the landowner representative testified that had he known about these access restrictions, these forced dedications, and the forced construction costs that the city is saddling these landowners with half street super arterial roadway costs. So it's not just the take of the property, the exaction of the dedication. It's the additional exaction of the costs of the super arterial. Had he known about it, the landowner testified he would not have purchased that property. So that's the evidence that was presented at the time.
He wouldn't have purchased 4 and 5.
He wouldn't have purchased the subsequent last two parcels. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's a statement about the city in 2004. They published the North Fifth Street Corridor Study. How did that impact your client in terms of looking at
this? Well, the city did multiple things in 2004, and they were really dealing with the amendment of the master plan of streets and highways, and this is when the city increased its right-of-way from a 100-foot arterial roadway and went to 150 feet. And the testimony and the evidence was that this regional plan is going 7.5 miles long, and they adopted this increased right-of-way the entire length from Owens Avenue in the south all the way to Clark County 215. So what it really impacted the property owner was an additional 25 feet of right-of-way along his 1,320-foot of frontage road along North Fifth was a condition of his development that would be dedicated to the city of North Las Vegas, and that was absolutely clear and established. And so really in the 2004 announcement, what the city does, and I hope I answered your question, and I'd like to talk about the first element of Buzz Stew, and that is the announcement of an intent to condemn, and was there substantial evidence presented to the district court on that issue, and clearly there was. And it's uncontested. Most of it came through, we stipulated in 180 exhibits, most of which were city documents, over 6,000 pages of city records came in, but through the city council minutes in July of 2004, the city council, and we believe covertly, increased the right-of-way without notice to the impacted landowners, without direct mailing to those impacted landowners. They increased the right-of-way from 100 to 150 feet and limited the access in July of 2004. Subsequent to that, and we cited the minutes from the August 2004 Planning Commission, the city went forward with the after notice to the landowners, and many landowners, including my client, appeared at those Planning Commission and City Council members' meetings, but they went forward with that AMP 7004 and announced that the primary purpose of AMP 7004 was to obtain dedication primarily along the undeveloped part of the North 5th Street corridor. That's the first announcement. That's from Cleet Cuss, and that's cited in our moving papers. Planning Commissioner Brown confirmed that the vote to approve this increased right-of-way was made with the understanding they are making a change that will eventually affect property owners.
We have other agreements. In 2004, 2007, we have the condemnation actions. In 2010, I guess the real question is, ultimately, when we get to 210, as reported by the city says, we limited our condemnation. We did not take the full stretch. We only took this discrete portion.
Well, that actually, and I appreciate you bringing that up, and that's their position. And that was their position at the summary judgment, at the trial and at the post-trial. And the district court listened to it and said, just saying something does not make it so. That's a quote from our findings and conditions as to that argument. When, in fact, we know through the primarily the city's person most knowledgeable, Kwan Lu, the director of Public Works Department, and also Mr. Fiore, that the plan for this project has always been and remains to start in the south at Owens, and we know that they have completed nearly 2 miles from Owens all the way to I-15, and at the time of the trial January of 2011, the flyover bridge over I-15 had been designed, engineered, put out for bid, contracted for, and the federal government had committed to pay federal funds. They had not yet been sent. The funds were not in the bank yet, but they had been committed. So we know that for that entire section south, they have gone well beyond mere planning. And actually, it's open for traffic. But what we know through Kwan Lu is that the plan continues to be to move forward north of Cheyenne. And when they tell you that that's planning only north of Cheyenne, that's belied by the facts in this case and the testimony. When during cross-examination, Kwan Lu admitted, and I asked, that were portions built north of Cheyenne? And she was forced to say, and the question is, question, so portions of it have been built north of Cheyenne, of the super arterial. They've been built north of Cheyenne. Yes or no? And she responds, yes, maybe 2,000 feet. And what she's referring to and what they tell you when they say it's only planning north of Cheyenne, it's not correct. Actually, 2,000 feet of the super arterial has been built north of Cheyenne at Deer Springs and Durrell, just north of my client's property. And it's been built, again, by the developer, and it's been built as an exaction, as a condition of the city allowing that property owner to develop their property. They had a forced dedication without a showing of nexus for that Deerfield market property, and they had a forced construction on the backs of that landowner, the cost of their super arterial plant. So when they tell you it's not going forward north of Cheyenne, that's belied by the facts in this case that were presented to Judge Denton. Additionally, we know that they've gone to 30% engineering from Cheyenne all the way to Clark County 215, and we know that the northern bookend at 215 and North 5th is completed. Now, that's been completed by the city of Clark County, but it's been built and is ready to accept the 8 lanes of super arterial that they want to bring through a portion of our landowner's property. So clearly they've gone beyond mere planning. The next element I'd like to address, and the court found it went beyond mere planning, 37 pages of comprehensive findings of fact on these issues, and I would ask this court to take a good look at them, because Judge Denton heard 8 days of testimony, 8 witnesses, affidavits that were submitted into court, and he made a well-reasoned decision that the standard of review for this court is, did he abuse his discretion? Was there substantial evidence for Judge Denton to make these findings and conclusions? And I would say absolutely there was. There was a mountain of evidence. And this court should not second-guess those factual findings that he made. And importantly, the factual questions regarding an expression by the public agency, whether that amounts to a taking or an intent to condemn this property, and whether there was extraordinary delay or unreasonable or oppressive conduct under Barcy and Buzz Stew, are both factual questions that should not be disturbed if they are based upon substantial evidence. So let's talk about that unreasonable delay and oppressive conduct by the city. Was there unreasonable delay after they made this 2004 announcement that they were going all the way up to 215 with 150-foot wide super arterial? Absolutely there was. The court found that 7 years at the time of trial was unreasonable delay. We're now at 9 years. Absolutely unreasonable delay was found. The court also found oppressive conduct. What was that oppressive conduct? and we've talked about it a little bit, the forced dedication of this right-of-way with no compensation given whatsoever, and it is a condition of development that was confirmed by both Quan Lu, the city's PMK, and Frank Fiore, their other PMK from Land Use Planning and Zoning. There was oppressive conduct related to the forced one-half street super arterial roadway construction costs that the city is going to saddle the developers with as a condition of development. And then the court also found it was oppressive that the city of North Las Vegas had not been more forthright with its widening and limited access decisions and its notice to the landowners, which then precluded the landowners from taking advantage of its reasonable backed expectations and selling that property for a multifamily use. And that really then gets us into our damage theory. And the damage theory, if I may just... the damage theory was pretty straightforward. Our position was this super arterial, and the evidence presented was that this super arterial, with its limited access all the way to 215, and again, a commercial shopping center needs full access, right in, right out, left in, left out, so anyone can easily access that site, or customers will go elsewhere. So this right in, right out restriction is a very restrictive, substantial negative impact on the access to this site. Additionally, we had a flyover bridge at Centennial. This originally was an at-grade arterial street, double section, right corner. They limit access up 15 and build a super arterial, which the only thing close to it in this city is Desert Inn from Valley View to Paradise, where you have very limited access and it flies underneath Las Vegas Boulevard. That's what we're talking about building, and they're talking about their plan, if I may. Let's put this roadway configuration up. This is what Plant is planning. 8 lanes, 3 each way for traffic, and dedicated bus lines, a center median that they won't allow left-hand turning access across, and landscaping. That's what the city intends and has always intended to build from Owens all the way to Clark County 215. But our damage theory that all of this, the limited access, the flyover bridge, all of it, the visibility and the costs associated with the forced dedication, all took away the commercial viability of this site. And that was the testimony. It came through 4 experts. We had George Garcia, a land use consultant, Alan Nevin, a professor of real estate development, very experienced gentleman. We had Jim Lee, a traffic engineer, no relation to the landowners, and we had Shelley Lowe in appraisal. All of them said this project, the city's project, destroyed the commercial viability. Additionally, the landowner testified to that fact. It was no longer viable as a commercial shopping center. That was confirmed by the Insight Development, Mr. Zier and Mr. Bowes, affidavits, and they were the people who placed this property under contract in 2008, March of 2008, and it was under contract. Escrow was opened, $560,000 was placed into escrow, and with a purchase price of $18.75 million for this 20-acre site. The contract due diligence and the affidavits are clear. The stipulated evidence is that during their due diligence, these buyers, experienced buyers, Mr. Zeter and Mr. Bowe, went to the city and tried to understand what this project was all about. And they determined because of this project, this site was no longer viable as a commercial site. And Affiant states, they made the determination that the subject property was no longer viable as a commercial shopping center based upon the plans and design of the North 5th Street Super Arterial Project. That's the evidence that was before Judge Denton, and it's uncontroverted. So, this Judge Denton, and again, the standard of review, and I believe Justice Cherry asked, what's the standard of review when considering damages? Well, as this court's well aware, the district court is clothed with wide discretion, and only an abuse of that discretion will compel this court to intercede in matters of damage calculations. Well, the court had evidence that the commercial viability was destroyed, and then it had an earlier offer, actually a series of offers, for the next highest and best use, multifamily development. And the court looked at the 18.75 commercial contracted for price, looked at the next highest and best use, the Camden offer, on this specific property, and did the math and said, okay, I'm not going to give you the valuation of a take. I'm going, because that would turn this pre-condemnation claim, which is a separate claim, separate and distinct from inverse, into an inverse condemnation damage. So there was evidence in the record, and I believe it was well sustained that the judge awarded from the difference between the highest and best use, and that should not be disturbed on an appeal. Likewise, the court looked at attorney's fees, and I think that the court looked at the Brunzell factors, looked at our contingent fee agreement, and finds and facts.
Can you get the attorney's fees if the court didn't agree with you on the inverse condemnation?
Potentially, because the court treated them as a measure of damages, and the party stipulated that it would be handled post-trial, and the landowner specifically pled an attorney's fees, a separate claim, and those likewise should not be disturbed on appeal. I do want to reserve some time for our reply on the cross-appeal, because we've hardly touched that issue.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Counsel.
Thank you. The sheer number of exhibits that Mr. Colquhoun and the investors cite to is not substantial evidence. He asked you to look at two different things. He asked you to look at a 30% engineering study. I have the exact exhibit sitting right before me today. A planning study, as you turn to the very first page on this particular document, it says specifically, a planning study. 30% proposed planning study. We were planning, and planning is not condemnation. The second thing that Mr. Colquhoun cites to is the North Fifth Street Corridor study for a flyover bridge. A flyover bridge that wasn't talked about in 2007. A flyover bridge that was only contemplated initially in the 2004 in a diagram that specifically says right at the bottom of it, and this is joint trial exhibit 18, it's found in volume 13 of the record, and it says preliminary, conceptual only, subject to change. Right at the bottom of that flyover, which proposes one alternative of many alternatives that could be done at Centennial and North Fifth Street. The actual document itself, on its initial pages, states the information and drawings in this study are conceptual, intended for planning purposes, only and subject to change with further study, preliminary design, and public input. There was no official announcement of intent to condemn. There simply cannot be. The city was engaged in planning. That's what it does. Had they wanted to find out what burden, if any, was going to be subject to their property, they should have submitted an application. You heard the investors today. They stated that there was a development less than a mile away from theirs on North Fifth Street. They submitted an application. They submitted that application, worked through the application process, and the city granted them left out access, right in, right out access. That development sits today. It's a beautiful, beautiful development that creates jobs for the city of North Las Vegas and a tax base. The city wants jobs. The city wants development. Submit an application. That's all we're asking. We're asking the city, we're asking the investors, please, please develop something here. But just submit an application and let us take a look at that application and work with you to provide the best alternative for both you and its citizens.
So that would, from your standpoint, dispute the position taken of the potential investors at 18 mil or whatever didn't really do due diligence as the project?
The only due diligence cited to you, Your Honor, was the fact that they went and talked to some unknown, unidentified city employee. They could never identify who it was. They couldn't identify who they talked to. The effect of this would be if Mr. Colquhoun were to go to my office and try to settle this case with my secretary. There's no authority. The reality is you can't do that. If he wants a determination, an official proclamation, as is required under Buzz 2, you've got to have the city council involved. And that never occurred. We were never given that opportunity.
Okay. What about the award of attorney's fees?
NRS 37 is fatal to the request for attorney's fees, Your Honor. It's just that simple. If you want attorney's fees, you need to prevail on an inverse or condemnation claim. They didn't. They don't get attorney's fees.
Okay. How about the interest calculations?
Interest calculations are, again, a simple determination based upon a time when you can identify an official announcement of intent to condemn. In this case, nobody, not even district court judge, could identify anything with specificity as to when there was an official announcement of intent to condemn, so he just went back to the complaint. That's where he started calculating interest from. Your Honor, the final thing that I want to point out is the ultimate conclusion if this court upholds the district court's decision. You're going to have plaintiff's attorneys running up and down North Fifth Street looking for a pre-condemnation damage award in millions of dollars for every single one of those undeveloped properties. The reality is that's not just limited to North Fifth Street. Every municipality in the state that has a master plan of streets and highways is going to be subject to allegations of pre-condemnation damages. This court said it appropriately, where it said that we indulge in no hyperbole to suggest that municipalities will be held for some vague and distant plans because the courts of the state would be inundated with futile litigation. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Colfer.
Appreciate it. No, I'll work fast. The testimony the district court did here was, and I'll recite the question from Kwan Lu. Question, the city's plan is and has always been to start in the south at Owens, to move 7 miles through the project and complete the regional super arterial project, correct? Answer, it's the plan. When they tell you, and that's from JA 9154, when they tell you that's not the plan, they're not being genuine with you. Additionally, they published studies, they had a website, they mailed thousands of postcards for 2005 and 2006 for public workshops. They entered into multiple contracts with RTC. They revised their comprehensive master plan to incorporate the North Fifth Street study. And they adopted capital budgets from the 2007 to 2011 timeframe that allocated $122 million to this project. So when they tell you it's only planning, that's not correct. Inverse condemnation should not have been dismissed as unright. That is a misapplication of the law, and this court can review that de novo. This is a regulatory per se taking. This is an unconstitutional exaction, and that was came through the testimony of their own witnesses. Question of Kwan Lu, I asked, and if I'm going to develop my property, the only way I can develop it is to give the city this additional 25-foot increased right-of-way. That's a condition of development, isn't it? Answer, yes. Question, the landowner doesn't have a choice in that, do they? No. And then I go on. Let me get this straight. For undeveloped property north of Cheyenne, the city is North Las Vegas is requiring 150-foot right-of-way, dedication, 75 feet on each side, yes. And then it goes on that there is no nexus. That was absolutely flat-out confirmed through the questions of Dr. Liu, which when they have an exaction like this, they need to establish a Nolan Dolan-type nexus. And they can't. It doesn't matter what the client is going to do, what my landowner is going to do with this 20-acre site, because they're building a regional transportation program. And I would cite the court just to... actually JA 9017 through 19 when Dr. Liu acknowledged there was no nexus. What they were doing with the North 5th Street had nothing to do with the issues on that. If I can just address the pre-condemnation in 1 minute, the commencement of pre-condemnation date of interest.
I'll let the opposing counsel respond to it.
Thank you very much. I believe this court has precedent. Judge Denton allowed the pre-condemnation interest award and correctly got that right. But what he did is he used the commencement date of the summons and complaint. Armstrong versus the state of Nevada, I think, gives this court clear authority that just compensation in a case involving unreasonable or oppressive pre-condemnation activities includes pre-judgment interest from the date of the pre-condemnation activities. City of Sparks versus Armstrong, Nevada 1987 case, clearly gives this court the ability to give these landowners just compensation. And that's what we're talking about, and that's what pre-condemnation interest going back to, pre-judgment interest going back to the date of the compensable injury of 2004 would provide for them. Thank you very much for your patience and indulgence.
Mr. Hardy, you have 1 minute to respond on the interest issue.
Strictly on the interest issue, I have two comments, Your Honor. First, there has to be a date certain in order for that interest to run from, which would require an official announcement, some identifiable date, not in this case. Secondly, and I find it amazing, I'm the one citing to Claflin today. Claflin is the case in which I would cite this court to, which the Claflin case, which goes from the date of the complaint. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, thank you all. I mean, as you said, it was a pretty exciting case for us, a lot of interesting issues, and we appreciate all the hard work and the briefing together with the oral arguments. We'll take a submission and give our colleagues a chance to listen to the oral arguments as well before we conference on it and vote on the case. So with that in mind, we'll be in recess until 1:30 this afternoon.